Coach Your Best, for me, suggests kind of how do you coach in terms of making sure that athletes become the best that they can be. I guess when we talk about best, we think about the Olympic gold medal, we think about kind of being the world's best athletes, but I think best for me suggests what is your own personal best, and that's what kind of Coach Your Best suggests to me. It's how do you coach and how do you get the best out of people to make sure that they reach their optimal performance potential.
This is the Coach Your Best podcast, hosted by performance coach, speaker, and best-selling author, Jeremy Boone. Brought to you by athletebydesign.com, helping you to become a world-class coach. Today's episode is designed to equip you with the latest principles and cutting-edge strategies to coach your best. Now, here's your host, Jeremy Boone.
Hey, I'm Jeremy Boone, and if you're a first-time listener, great to have you. Welcome to the show. And if you're a regular, it's even better to have you back. There's lots of great things going on in the fall for me and Athlete by Design, having a ton of fun going around to high schools and colleges and talking about this new program built around personal and athletic excellence and leadership. It's titled Protect Your Mission, and people ask me all the time, where did you get that name? And Protect Your Mission is the theme or the mantra that I gave the NFL guys that I get to work with this past spring as part of our big goal. What's the big achievement that each of them wanted to achieve personally and with their teams? We built around an entire program, both mental, physical, spiritual, around that whole idea of Protect Your Mission. So now we're bringing it into school. So on a quick side note, there are probably four or five available dates left that are open for the school calendar year, which means between now and going into next May of 2017. So if you're listening now and you're affiliated with a school or an organization and you're looking for a speaker, a consultant to come in and work with your athletes and your coaches and really your parents, for those of you in high school and middle school, please reach out and let me know. We'd love to get you on the book. And you can reach me at athletebydesign.com. Or if you're on social media, reach out to me with Facebook or Twitter. I'm at athletebydesign. And have one more little side note, just for some house cleaning notes, that this will be one of maybe two more episodes where my voice in my conversation with my guests sounds like I'm in a big church or I'm in a bathroom, and going through a really exciting phase right now. I'm just evolving and growing, but I've got a very small team. Usually I'm a team of one. I occasionally have one or two other individuals that'll assist me from time to time, but just we're growing so much and able to help a lot of coaches and a lot of athletes globally. So in the process of updating sound equipment, recording equipment, computers, websites, and literally everything in between. So thanks for being patient through that process. You're going to see some updates on the website here at the end of September. And everything should be ready to launch and officially ready to go here first part of October. So excited to share some good stuff and good stories there with you all. On to today's show. This is a featured episode around the topic of research you should know. And if you are a regular, you know I like to kind of rotate through these topics that include research you should know, occasionally quotes you should know, books you should know, then Coach Your Best tips. And we're getting ready to introduce later this fall podcasts you should know as well. So we'll have a good, fun, healthy rotation of different types of topics. But today, this episode, we're dialing into research you should know. And my guest is a sports science lecturer and researcher from the UK, Dr. Mustafa Sarkar. We're talking about this whole idea of resiliency. And we're going to take a look at three or four different research studies that he has recently published around this whole idea of resiliency. We're going to talk about what's the definition, really a practical definition of resiliency. What is it? Why do we need to know about it? A couple of big ideas in this conversation that I think would add the most value for you that I want you to listen for. One is, what are the different types of being resilient? We're going to talk about this phrase of what Mustafa calls challenge appraisal. It's a great phrase, so I want you to listen out for that. We're going to talk about the five psychological factors that his research has identified that attribute to an athlete being resilient. We're going to look at the role that adversity plays with individual resiliency with athletes you work with, and we'll get into team resiliency as well. We're going to talk about self-identity and the role that that plays in being resilient. Many of you have athletes that have all the physical tools, and mentally they have okay tools, but at the end of the day, their self-identity just is not clear, or it's really small. And so regardless of the reason, how does that affect an athlete being able to be resilient, handle pressure, and show up when it counts the most? And then at the very end of this episode, once we get through all this kind of research and sciencey stuff, we're going to end by giving you some practical advice for coaches who don't have a sports psychology, a mental performance, sports science background. We're going to give you some practical advice for all the listeners on how you can help your athletes become more resilient. So with that said, I think you're really going to enjoy this episode's conversation with Dr. Mustafa Sarkar.
I'd like to welcome to the Coach Your Best podcast, Mustafa Sarkar, and I'm so excited to have you on the show. It's been a lot of fun to have a few behind-the-scenes conversations with you, brother. Getting to read just a ton of research that you put out, and we're anxious to hear what you have coming down the pipe. But for those listeners that might not be familiar with you, especially here in the States, because I know you're on the other side of the ocean, give us a little background about who you are, what's your current role, and how you're helping the world of sports.
Yeah, no, first of all, thank you very much, Jeremy, for inviting me on, and really, you know, really excited to share my research on resilience with your viewers. I'm a lecturer in sport and exercise psychology at Nottingham Trent University in the UK. So for those of you who don't know the UK particularly well, it's about 2 hours from London, which is our obviously capital city. So I've been a lecturer for just under a year now at the university, and my role kind of involves a combination of teaching but also research at the university. So I teach both undergraduate and postgraduate students studying sport and exercise science, but particularly sport and exercise psychology. In terms of my research, my interest, my expertise, I've looked at the area of resilience over the last 4 or 5 years. Resilience both at the individual level, so how do we define and what does resilience mean to athletes at the personal level, but also looking to explore resilience at the team level, so taking kind of personal resilience and extending that to teams as well. So that's what my role is, and that's kind of what my research area has focused on.
Now, growing up, did you play any sports?
I did. Growing up, I played. I guess it's not a sport that the US probably has a huge amount of. I played cricket. Cricket was my main sport growing up, and a little bit of soccer as well.
Okay, so let me just tell you for those listeners in the States, because I've had the pleasure of being over in England a few years ago and with some football and cricket over there. Cricket is not the same as baseball. It is nowhere near the same. So. That'll be for another topic, another day.
Yeah. You know, you're right there. Yeah, cricket not the same as baseball. But two very, very different sports. And actually, interesting you asked me that question in relation to what I played growing up. Actually, the reason I got into sports psychology was I was an elite youth cricketer growing up, but I wasn't quite good enough to make it to the national or become an international cricketer. And that's what got me interested in sports psychology, because I was seeing that I was half talented as a cricketer, But actually, what I didn't have was actually the psychological makeup. I wasn't particularly resilient as a cricketer myself, and that's what got me interested. Why was it that some athletes were able to perform at the highest level and withstand that pressure, and other people were quite talented but still really struggled to make it to the top? And that's what resilience is all about. What is it? How do people perform under pressure, really?
So, quick side story about playing cricket. My very first time, 2006, Mustafa, I get asked to come up and see if I can take a bat on the ball. And I'm like, yeah, I can do this. And so I stand up there and I hold it like a baseball bat, and you know, they explain to me to get it down. And I'm like, look, my goal is just to make contact. And I mean, this guy, the bowler, which is real, kind of like our pitcher for the listeners out there, I mean, he takes his wind up. It looks like Jenny Finch from softball, about just to rock it in. I'm like, okay, I'm going to bunt. Like in baseball, I just want to make contact because I got a lot of people looking at me, and I'm the American. And I get hit in the side of the hip, and I get this big old bruise, and I'm like, what the heck? And everybody starts laughing at me, Mustafa, and they're like, yeah, you're out. I'm like, wait, what? Because trying to figure out that was pretty interesting from the rules, brother.
Yeah. So in terms of getting hit on the hip and the leg, you kind of there's a rule called I don't know did they tell you what that rule was?
Oh no, they just enjoyed laughing at me. Are you kidding?
It's just like laughing. Yeah. There's a rule in cricket called LBW, which stands for leg before wicket. And basically, if it hits your leg and the ball is about to hit the wicket, but it actually hits your leg beforehand, you can be kind of called out for LBW, the leg before wicket. So you're right, cricket is one of those sports. It's a great sport if you know the rules and you've been immersed in that kind of culture. But I appreciate, obviously, if it's a sport that you don't know a huge amount about and you haven't played it before, when you look at it on television, it can be quite a sport which can come across as quite boring. But I promise you, get involved in it for your listeners. Get involved in it. Have a watch of it and read about it. And it's a great sport to get involved in.
Well, let's just say, as we get started into this conversation, that unfortunately, when it came to cricket, I was not very resilient. So it didn't work. Well, to kind of get this started, and you kind of gave us a little hint into resiliency. What's a really practical definition for the word, you know, resilient? And other different types of resiliency.
Yeah, so a practical definition. There's lots and lots of academic definitions, which I'm not obviously going to go into. But in terms of a practical definition, how I like to talk about resilience is the ability to withstand pressure, the ability to deal with pressure in a positive fashion. And particularly when it comes to resilience, it's about being able to maintain functioning, being able to maintain levels of performance and maintain your well-being despite the pressures that you may be encountering. So when particularly when I talk about resilience, I talk about psychological resilience. So there's various different types of resilience. There's physical resilience, there's emotional resilience, there's educational resilience, there's loads and loads of different types. When I talk about the psychological resilience, is what is it about people's thoughts, feelings and behaviors, the psychology that enables them to deal with pressure well. So that's kind of what I mean by psychological resilience, is being able to deal with pressure and the psychology behind that.
And I'm assuming here that when we talk about, whether we say managing pressure and the actual study, which we're going to get into, to use the phrase managing stress, that stress is internally driven as well as externally felt. Right. I mean, we're looking at both sides of the coin.
Yeah. So some of the pressures could be internal. Some of them could be external. Well, one perfect example of that is something like expectations. Both kind of, you can have internal at your own expectations of performing well, but also external expectations from family, from friends, from coaches, from various different people. So you're right. The stress that people encounter can be both kind of internally come from internal sources, but also external sources as well.
Yeah, so here's the kicker in the specific study that we're talking about now, which is titled A Grounded Theory of Psychological Resilience in Olympic Champions. And we'll make sure we put a link, you know, to the study in the show notes. But here's the big but, okay? I'm going to come that I am just going to read straight from the study itself. But the construct of psychological resilience has yet to be systematically examined in athletic performers. And so, you know, you guys look like that you've sought to be able to explain that relationship between the two. So walk us through what the study was, what you looked at, and, you know, what the therefore was.
Yeah, so we wanted to develop a theory of resilience, and our focus was looking at Olympic athletes. And the reason why we wanted to focus particularly on that population was the Olympics, as you'd have seen in and obviously the Rio Olympics in particular just quite recently, there's huge pressures on athletes internally, externally, and it's a competition where you've just not just got the pressures in terms of the build, in terms of the Olympics itself, but also the build up, the 4 years of training that you do just for this one event. So what we wanted to look at was, what was it about Olympic champions and their journey that helped them? What were some of the kind of the psychological aspects that helped them to withstand pressure in the Olympics and ultimately go on to win an Olympic gold medal? So what we did as part of the study was we interviewed 12 Olympic champions from both individual and team sports, both from summer and winter Olympic games, from a variety of different nationalities, predominantly British Olympic champions, but also champions from New Zealand. And we interviewed them, and the interviews lasted approximately 80 to 90 minutes each. So quite kind of detailed interviews with these Olympic champions, asking them questions around the pressures that they'd encountered, what psychological factors that they considered were important to help them to withstand that pressure, and ultimately, what was it about their performance that they found to be particularly important? And a kind of a quick summary of the theory that we came up with. So based on the interviews that we did, we transcribed the interviews, we kind of read the interviews line by line, and then we kind of analyzed those interviews in a really kind of systematic way. And based on the analysis, we came up with a theory, and I'll try to kind of describe it in a really practical way. So what we found was that these Olympic athletes and these Olympic champions encountered a variety of different stresses in the lead up to winning their Olympic gold. And we categorized those stresses into three different types. Personal stresses, so those are stresses that were related to the kind of non-sporting life events. Competitive stresses, so those were stresses related to actual competitive performance. And then organizational stresses, so the stresses and the pressures that were related to the organization that they were involved with. And particularly important with Olympic champions, and the really key part of resilience was that they evaluated and they thought about those pressures as an opportunity to develop and to grow. And the technical term for that was challenge appraisal. And a challenge appraisal, practically speaking, is the ability to appraise or the ability to evaluate pressure as an opportunity to get better, as an opportunity to grow, as an opportunity for development. And as well as challenge appraisal, the athletes also had the ability to think about their own thoughts. And in the research study itself, we talked about that as metacognition. So cognition is simply thoughts. And the meta part is the ability to think about your own thoughts. It's a kind of a higher level of thinking. So as well as being able to think about pressure as an opportunity to grow, or think about pressure as a challenge, they also were able to think about their own thoughts in real time. And that process of thinking, of kind of constructive thinking, led the athletes to respond in a positive way. So they put in more effort, they put in more as a result of the pressure and a result of their thinking, they put in more effort, they worked harder, they thought about their emotions in a positive way. And that led to what we've kind of termed optimal performance. So rather than talking about performance as their gold medal, we talked about optimal performance. So performing to one's best, really. What was really, really important in terms of this theory was that there were five psychological factors that played a really, really important role in the challenge appraisal and metacognitions. So those five psychological factors were a positive personality, motivation, confidence, focus, and perceived social support. Mm. So it was those five psychological factors that we've kind of termed kind of was a protective bubble, which really protected individuals from the negative effects of stress. And it was those five psychological factors which really helped athletes think about pressure as a positive, think about pressure as an opportunity to grow. So again, I've probably gone on there for quite a while, but yeah, that's kind of a bit of a summary of the study, but also what we found as part of that study.
Gosh, such good stuff. You know, let me circle back and just a couple of things come to mind. The first one is this phrase, challenge appraisal. And I think that's a really interesting phrase because even some of the Olympic athletes that I've been fortunate to work with, they quickly get into a threat appraisal, if we want to use that phrase, right? And not be able to keep it as a challenge, but more as a threat to be able to do that. And so when I hear you say these kind of five things, five items, five categories help buffer that and keep it as a challenge. I mean, what a great simple formula, I think, for listeners of this show to take back and use as a litmus test with the athletes that they work with, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. That this, generally speaking, in terms of how you look at pressure, you can either look at pressure as a challenge, you can either look at it as a threat. What we found particularly with these kind of champions, that they were looking at pressure as a challenge, and those five factors really provided, as the perfect phrase that you mentioned was, really provided a buffer that helped them to think about pressure in that kind of fashion.
Can you give us a little bit more insight into how you all defined perceived social support? I mean, is that just where you have your mom sitting in the stands cheering you on, saying, "Woohoo, good job"? Or is it something a little bit more than that, maybe?
Yeah, so perceived social support, what was really important was it wasn't actually the social support that athletes received. What was really important was the athletes perceived or thought that they had people around them that could help them or support them when they were going through a difficult time. So it wasn't actually the act of actually getting support that was important. What was more important was that the knowledge that someone would be there for them if they had gone through a situation. It was the perception that was important rather than actually receiving the support per se.
Did you guys go in and look at, you know, which type of role play the strongest support? Like a coach obviously would be social support. Parents, friends, teammates. I mean, did you break that down at all? Or
yeah, so we broke that down slightly in terms of the kind of the people that you were mentioning. There were family, there were friends, there were coaches. What we also found really interestingly, there was support staff that played an important role. So that was physiotherapists, that could have been strength and conditioning coaches, that could have been athletic trainers, also psychologists as well played an important role. And what we particularly found important was being able to match the type of support that was needed with the specific people that provided that support. So in some cases, family provided some really good emotional support. In other cases, coaches provided some really good kind of tangible support. So what was really important for these athletes was matching the type of support that was needed with the person who was able to provide that type of support.
So to kind of summarize this particular study, is it safe to say, you know, are these five psychological factors, five items, are they part of a makeup of resiliency, or are they part of a makeup that allow an athlete to be resilient for optimal sports performance? Or is that all the same thing?
No, that's a really good question. There's different perspectives when it comes to resilience. There's the kind of the trait perspective, which suggests that there are these kind of innate psychological traits and characteristics that people have. So certainly these five psychological factors are important in that respect, and that they help or if individuals or athletes have these five psychological factors, they're more likely to be resilient to stress and pressure. But also there's an alternative view on resilience, that it's a process that kind of develops over time. So these psychological factors in itself aren't the be end and end all. What we've identified as being really important, as mentioned, was this kind of process over time where individuals appraise and evaluate pressure as an opportunity to grow. And that's not something that happens overnight. That takes time. It takes kind of mental practice and mental preparation. But certainly, yeah, these five factors don't necessarily make up resilience, but they're very important. I guess how I would like to describe it is kind of contributory factors that increase the chances of athletes being resilient to pressure.
Now, one of the key ingredients for resiliency, you and I talked about here before we jumped on and actually got into our recording, is the role that adversity plays. Because without some type of challenge to varying intensities, you can't have the qualitative state of being resilient. So you went on to another study that looked just at adversity, which I found pretty fascinating as well. The title of the study was What Doesn't Kill Me? And adversity-related experiences are vital in the development of superior Olympic performance. And talk to us then a little bit about – this was a follow-up study to the first one we just talked about, where, you know, how did you look at adversity? How did you divide adversity up? And then what did you guys find?
Yeah, so just to kind of give your viewers a bit of understanding in terms of how this follow-up study came about. So in our initial study, which was published in 2012, we identified as part of that study that a lot of the athletes that we were talking to mentioned that if they hadn't encountered certain stresses, and some of the stresses were highly demanding adversities, if they hadn't encountered those stresses, they wouldn't have gone on to win their Olympic gold. So we thought it would be kind of a good opportunity then to explore those adversities and in a little bit more detail with these athletes. So we did some follow-up interviews with the Olympic champions. From the 12 that we originally interviewed, we were able to do follow-up interviews with 10 of those Olympic athletes, again, from individual and team sports, summer and winter Olympic Games. And the kind of the aim of the study was, first of all, to explore the adversities that these athletes encountered, but then really importantly as well, to explore what the effect that these adversities had on the psychological, but also their performance development as athletes. And what we found was there were various adversities that these athletes encountered, and we categorized those adversities into sport-related adversities and non-sport adversities. And the sport adversities were a failure at a major competition. So that was examples were a failure at a previous Olympic Games, failure at a European Championships or a World Championships. And again, these athletes mentioned if they hadn't encountered that kind of failure in competition, they wouldn't have gone on to win their Olympic gold. Another kind of adversity that we'd encountered or we'd identified was repeated non-selection. So this wasn't just non-selection in one competition. This, in some cases, this was non-selection over the course of 3 or 4 years, which they felt was really important in terms of their development. Another sport adversity was injury. A lot of the athletes mentioned that in the build-up to the Olympics, they'd encountered a serious injury, which really influenced their psychology and their performance.
What about non-sports related types of adversity?
So in terms of non-sports related adversity, we identified a lot of the athletes talked about the death of a significant other. This tended to be a family member. And interestingly, most of the athletes that we'd spoken to had actually had a significant other passing away in the lead up to their journey to becoming an Olympic athlete. And again, controversially as this sounds, the champions mentioned that if that family member hadn't passed away, actually that gave them the focus and the determination to succeed in their sport. And then the other non-sport adversity, particularly, and this was particularly important for some of the kind of the older Olympic champions, was political unrest. And this was political unrest both in the country that they were from, but also during the Olympics itself. And again, that kind of non-sport adversity, that political unrest, gave them that fuel and ambition to want to succeed for their country and for the kind of the Olympic movement.
So what was the most common sporting adversity identified by, or was there one?
Yeah, probably the most common sporting adversity was failure at was kind of a significant sporting failure. And that failure could have been various different things. So failure at a previous Olympics, failure at a major championships, and in some cases, actually, failure at the Olympic, failure at an earlier round in the Olympics that they were performing in. So sports such as rowing, they give you, if you've not succeeded in the, if you don't know the sport of rowing particularly well, they give you that opportunity to actually, I think it's called a repêché, where you're actually able to perform in and around where you can kind of make up for that earlier kind of defeat. And the Olympic, particularly those who were in those sports that had the opportunity or were in sports where they could fail in the earlier rounds of the Olympics, but still go on to win a medal. Athletes mentioned that as a particularly kind of a significant sporting failure in the Olympics itself. So yeah, significant sporting failure, I would say, was probably one of the most common adversities, and one of the most common non-sporting adversities was actually the death of a family member. That surprisingly was an adversity that was really quite common for the champions that we'd talked to.
Did you guys take a look at the role of self-identity with an athlete? Because I think that, you know, all of these types of adversity and the way kind of you guys defined resiliency come back to athletes who must have had a great internal or a strong motivated internal story to say, if I have a mom this past or a family member this past, or, you know, there's an obstacle in my way, my story is I'm going to overcome it. And maybe does that what set many of these Olympians in your experience apart? Because, you know, let's be honest, most people, when they're faced with adversity, they're not resilient. You know, they succumb to fear. They succumb to shame. They succumb to disappointment, you know, and discouragement, and they lay down. Talk to us a little bit about that as we wrap up here, part one.
Yeah, so there were three kind of parts which were really important in terms of why were these particular athletes able to actually overcome adversity. The first kind of part was these adversities led to trauma. Now, funnily enough and controversially, how we've defined trauma are some really, really intense negative emotions, major disappointment, anger in some cases, fury. So some really strong negative emotions. But these athletes mentioned, we kind of, when we talk about emotions, we think that positive emotions are great and negative emotions are not so great. But these athletes mentioned the importance of negative emotions and being able to reflect, first of all, to accept, and then to reflect on these negative emotions, because these negative emotions really give these athletes an opportunity to think about what was really important for them. So first of all, trauma played a really, really important role. You then mentioned about identity. Now, identity fit in really well with our second theme in relation to motivation. So again, when we think about motivation, we think about kind of intrinsic motivation being really good and extrinsic motivation being not so good. But these athletes talked about the importance of wanting to prove others wrong, wanting to do well because their mum, for example, had passed away. And as you mentioned, in terms of identity, their identity as a result of this adversity and trauma had really, really shifted. It really changed their identity in terms of had a real strong identity in terms of ambition and fuel, in terms of this kind of more, what we would actually call a more kind of a dangerous or kind of a more darker side of motivation. And then, as well as the trauma and motivation, another really key part of of their kind of psychological and performance development was in relation to learning. So as well as trauma and motivation, one other key aspect was being able to learn from those experiences and gain confidence from those kind of adverse experiences and reflect quite deeply in terms of what those experiences meant for these individuals and what they could benefit from them. So in terms of their development, trauma, motivation and learning were really, really important. And I guess what separated or what enabled them to really thrive in these kinds of situations.
So coaches that don't have an in-depth background in psychology that are hearing all these words that they probably hear about a lot, but they have never really known how they all kind of come together until now, and kind of hearing these two studies that you guys have published. What do you want that coach to walk away with from here in part one on the individual level? When it comes to resilient, how would you kind of summarize both of these studies in for that newer low-level coach or maybe an experienced coach, but this doesn't have a formal background in psychology? What do you want them to walk away with?
So, yeah, if I take kind of each study in turn, the first study for kind of practical advice for coaches, first of all, the bit around challenge appraisal and metacognitions, it's all around thinking. So if coaches are able to get athletes to think more constructively around pressure, think about pressure as an opportunity to develop and grow rather than as something that's going to be a threat and rather than something that's going to be harmful to their performance. If athletes are able to think in those terms, they're more likely to be resilient to those pressures. And then in terms of those psychological factors, it's obviously different coaches have got so many things to be thinking about, but if they can kind of monitor and identify those psychological factors in their athletes and think about which psychological factors do their athletes particularly well at, but also the factors that they think their athletes can improve on. If they can monitor and kind of implement those psychological factors in their training to get those psychological factors, I guess, higher up, then that will obviously help them to become more resilient as well. So again, just a summary of those factors: positive personality, motivation, confidence, focus, and getting more support. Those factors we've found to be really, really important in terms of resilience. In terms of the second study, now the second study is a quite controversial one. So we're basically saying that adversity is really, really important when it comes to superior Olympic performance. So coaches may automatically think if we want to get better performance, we need to put these athletes in really kind of difficult and adverse situations. The caveat to that is it's really, really important when you're thinking about adversities is to kind of separate them between, I guess, adversities that you can't control and adversities that happen as part of life. So, you know, we wouldn't want athletes, you know, it'd be wrong and ethically and morally wrong to say that, you know, we want athletes to go through a death of a family member. We don't want that to happen. But what we can do is how do we then, if that does happen and if that sometimes is an inevitable part of an athlete's life, what can coaches do so that they can help athletes to reflect better on that experience when it comes to things like motivation and learning? So there are some adversities that are not controllable and things that happen as part of life. And then at the same time, there are other types of adversities, things like sporting failure, deselection, that coaches can, the two really important words here are progressively and safely. Progressively and safely exposing athletes to challenging situations. And it's obviously really important that is developmentally correct. So, you know, how you do that with youth athletes are going to be very different to how you do that with adult athletes. So exposing athletes progressively and safely to kind of demanding and challenging situations. And the basic idea with that is that if you put athletes in pressurized situations in training, they're more likely to deal with them better in competition. So a kind of, I guess, a take home message with that study is that failure isn't bad. Actually, in some cases, failure can be quite a good thing. It's just being able to make athletes aware of that, debriefing them in those kinds of situations, and thinking about kind of pressure and failure as an opportunity to get better.
Well, listen, brother, ton of great information for us all, me included, and thankful that you're able to give up some of your time to jump on and be a guest on the show, and looking forward to having you back on part two, where we're going to jump in into the team lens of resiliency and kind of one or two other studies that you've done. Where can the listeners go to find out more about your research, find out more about you, and give us some links and ways to connect with you?
Sure. So I'm on Twitter. So I do post quite a few things, particularly sports psychology related kind of articles and in the media. So my Twitter feed is at Mus, which is M-U-S, Sarkar. So Mus, at Mus Sarkar. I'm on LinkedIn. In terms of my research, a lot of my research is freely available on ResearchGate. So if you want to kind of hook up in terms of the research, a lot of my research is on there. And also in terms of kind of just to get a bit of a more flavor in terms of what I do in terms of my research and consultancy, my university website, Nottingham Trent University, I'm on my kind of my staff profiles on there as well. So, yeah, various ways to get in touch.
All right, brother. Looking forward to having you back in part two.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Jeremy.
This has been another episode of the Coach Your Best podcast with Jeremy Boone. Get even more helpful tips and free coaching resources to help you become a world-class coach by visiting athletebydesign.com.